Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. We kick off this Thursday with yet another weird law from around the world. This one comes to you courtesy of the city of Gainesville in Georgia. Once again, we're in the United States. It seems they have a fondness for laws that don't necessarily make sense, but this one seems to have some logic to it. Gainesville once looked to promote themselves as the poultry capital of the world. And as a result of that, there was a 1961 law that was introduced that banned people and prohibited individuals from eating fried chicken using utensils. And this was in an effort to have people use their fingers to eat the chicken. Although it's not really enforced in today's day and age, it looks as though this law is still in effect. One wonders whether or not it was that extreme or that necessary to be that extreme. Nevertheless, you're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest Consumer Confidence Index data that came out of the Bureau for Economic Research. We're going to speak to the chief economist at FNB around that and get a sense of what it says about the South African consumer at the moment. Then we've got a conversation with the Standard Bank Group taking a look at Africa's future and the infrastructure financing that needs to take place on the continent. Then we have a conversation with the team at Walt Disney, or rather the Walt Disney Company, around Disney Plus and their new product offering. They are effective October the 2nd of this year, so in a couple of days' time, going to be adding sports to that streaming service. We're going to speak to Disney about that and get a sense of what that means for that product offering. Then we've got a conversation with South African breweries taking a look at the world's biggest braai that they hosted yesterday in celebration of Heritage Day, otherwise known as Braai Day in South Africa. And then we're going to wrap up the show with a small business conversation, because Thursdays are SME Thursdays. We've got a small business by the name of Mahlasedi. Stick around to find out what it is that they do and how the founder built that business.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off with market movements throughout the day, as we always do. The markets have had a negative day this week, probably the most bearish day, rather, of the week. And I'm joined on the line by investment analyst at Anchor Capital, Robbie Proctor, to take a look at this and see what might be causing this. Robbie, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with the Rand. We were quite optimistic on Tuesday going into the public holiday when we saw 17 Rand 26 at some point. This time around, I think we even got as low as 17 Rand 21, if I'm not mistaken, earlier in the week. We're back at 17 Rand 44, not necessarily where we want to be. What's happening on the dollar side of things?
Good evening, Jimmy. The Rand does tend to be battered, you know, predominantly by global factors. And I think what you've seen in the U.S. over the past couple of days is a couple of Fed members speaking, kind of, you know, pointing to maybe a slower pace of interest rate cuts than what's currently priced into the market. And any sort of good economic data coming out of the U.S. tends to be dollar positive and, you know, everyone else negative. So, you know, yeah, I think we are, you know, I think the Rand has been pretty strong, but, and I would say this is potentially a bit of a short-term move.
Robbie, do you think we've got enough strength to break through that 17 Rand barrier? I mean, we've had conversations around 16 Rand 80 against the dollar, and we've had conversations around a weaker dollar at this point, but it seems as though it is finding a bit of support at some key levels. I'm looking at the dollar index, the Dixie, finding support at that 96 points mark. I'm seeing similar things on the Rand, finding support at that 17-20 range as well. Do we think we've got enough to break 17?
I think certainly the macro bracket backdrop remains pretty supportive for the Rand. I mean, particularly the commodities export revenue that we're getting, particularly now from Platinum Group Metals, as not only has the price risen, but production has picked up after a pretty weak first and second quarter. So, I think the base case tends to be, you know, more dollar weakness to come, which, you know, should really drive the Rand, you know, below some of those key trading levels that you spoke of.
Robbie, let's look at those commodities. I'm looking at the performance of the resources sector down about 1.1% today. Obviously, contextualizing that, the resource sector has been doing exceptionally well. Platinum pricing has been doing well. Gold pricing, even though it is negative at the moment, it does remain at relatively all-time highs, considering we're still well above $3,700. Yes, we didn't break $3,800 a fine ounce, but we're at about $3,740. Any need to be concerned at the moment about the commodity movements, or is it just some profit taking, some usual market movements? I mean, we can't expect every day to be a green day, surely?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, if you look into the sort of sub segments of commodities today, it was certainly the miners that were exposed to copper that it was their turn to have a good day. The PGM miners also had a very good day. However, with the performance of the gold shares this year, you know, their weighting in the index has exceeded every other sort of commodity. So what we did see was a bit of profit taking in gold today after, you know, and again it points back to a bit of dollar strength. But certainly, the move to close to 3,800 on the gold price certainly warrants maybe a little bit of short-term profit-taking, but I think we generally, pretty confident about the outlook for gold going forward.
Robbie, how long do we still have left? I know it's very difficult for you to predict, but if you had to look at the current commodity cycle we're in, it perhaps might not be as great as the super cycle we went through coming out of the pandemic, but it is certainly running quite hot across all the commodities. How long do these kind of cycles last? And is it too late to take advantage of it if we're looking at, again, some of the commodity companies from an equity perspective, or even the commodity prices themselves?
It's quite a unique potential super cycle in the fact that it's potentially more supply driven than demand driven. I mean, it's not the early 2000s where you had, you know, China building, you know, building bridges, infrastructure, buildings. So it's not quite like that. But the hangover from the last super cycle has pretty much manifested itself in very low levels of spending by the mining companies on the existing operations. So what you're seeing is actually more of a scarcity-driven rally, more so than, you know, particularly demand-driven rally. And that we're seeing it across the PGMs in terms of very weak mine supply going backwards and likely to continue going backwards. And then within copper, you're seeing a lot of disruption around global mines. I mean, the latest is the Grasberg mine in Papua, Indonesia, which has had to declare force majeure, and that's actually the within the top five copper mines globally. So we're seeing a lot of disruption to supply, and unfortunately for a lot of these companies, the lack of spending over the last sort of decade is starting to, you know, impact the performance of their current operations.
Robbie, let's take a look at the equity front. Locally, equity is doing really well despite some of the movements. Again, when we're looking at some of the equity markets, at least locally, it looks like it is a bit of profit-taking there as well. If I compare it with international market movements, the Nikkei in Tokyo are doing rather well, but European markets struggling along as well. It seems to be kind of the theme here around the equity markets is that where there is, as you said a little earlier in our conversation, where there is a bit of risk that flights out of markets, or there's a bit of positivity around the dollar, equity markets are feeling it a little more sensitively.
Yeah, for sure, Jimmy. It's I think domestically, I think, you know, the sort of performance of the gold shares has really sucked a lot of capital out of other areas of the market, you know, particularly retailers and banks. And they are definitely taking their cue today from, you know, from the moves that happened, you know, during Heritage Day yesterday and again followed up today. But yeah, I was a little surprised that we didn't see a bit more bid for the sort of SA Inc. Counters today, given, you know, gold coming back. But unfortunately, I think global factors subsumed, you know, the potentially positive benefits of managers shifting back towards SA Inc. sort of companies.
Robbie, do you think the SA Inc. story is still out there? Do you think that from an emerging market perspective, we are still the go-to emerging market? We have been for the majority of this year. Do you think that markets are still looking at South Africa and saying, you know what, interest rates are looking attractive on that side, yields are looking fantastic from a bond perspective, and the market itself is remaining resilient?
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of real bond yields in South Africa, I mean, they remain, attractive from a global perspective. And historically, you have tended to find when our longer-term bond yields start declining, you should generally have a positive performance coming out of our banks and our retailers. Unfortunately, it really hasn't happened this year. And I think, you know, the SARB's pursuit of a 3% inflation target, while it's having a really positive impact on our bonds, it's not necessarily what you want to see from a growth perspective, at least in the near term. I mean, a lot of arguments can be made about the longer term benefits of a lower inflation target. However, in the near term, I think the market wants to see some rate cuts to sort of push money back into the more rate sensitive parts of the market, and that is, you know, generally discretionary retail and to a, you know, slightly lesser extent our banks.
And eventually that would hopefully then filter through into a positive GDP figure when we review that as well. But we'll leave the conversation on this note. Thanks so much to Robbie for those insights and for the time. Robbie Proctor, investment analyst at Anchor Capital, joining us to take a look at market movements throughout the day and perhaps some market decisions.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The Bureau for Economic Research released the Consumer Confidence Index today, an update on whether or not consumers are feeling confident about the economic conditions of the country. No surprises, consumers are under pressure. They continue to remain under pressure. South Africa's middle class is all but breaking and debt levels continue to rise. We're going to take a look at this and other insights from this index with the chief economist at FNB South Africa, that is Mamelo Matinka Ngwenya. She joins me on the line now to take a look at the latest stats and see what we make of them. Mamelo, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Your initial thoughts around the consumer confidence figures. This is probably one of the worst prints that we've seen in recent times coming out of a pandemic, and consumers are clearly feeling the pressure.
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, to your point that the index has not improved significantly. Fine, in the first quarter of the year, we saw it dip to around negative 20, but at negative 13, it's still well below the long-term average reading of about negative 1 since 1994. However, what was quite interesting in this round of the survey is when one looks at consumer confidence per income group, to your point, the middle class still feeling a bit of pressure, but we saw, you know, your low-income households record an improvement in sentiment. And I think maybe just to contextualize that, by an improvement, it moved from negative 15 to negative 9. So not positive, but nonetheless a positive step change. Why do I think that was interesting? That's because if we think about food inflation around the time that we conducted the survey, that increased, and we tend to see that consumers in that segment of the market are disproportionately impacted by, you know, things like inflation as it erodes their purchasing power. And I think during that period, we also saw that, you know, a number of people lost their lives in the Eastern Cape floods. So it was quite interesting on the, you know, given those events, that we did see a bit of an improvement in confidence in that segment of the market.
Mamelo, I want to take a look at some of the other data that came out that seemed interesting. I saw that for the first time since early 2023, we saw a growth in the number of loans in default. Now, that suggests that whatever credit consumers are currently battling with at the moment or currently contending with, they're unable to repay. And that clearly means that not only is the consumer under pressure, they are barely making it through.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I think especially if you think about it in the context of a central bank that's been easing interest rates. So one way of looking at it is that consumers have potentially tapped into your more expensive credit, unsecured credit, and servicing that type of credit is still relatively expensive. So we're not yet seeing the full benefit of the lower interest rates and inflation that is moderated. That's going to take a little bit of time. So it does suggest that there is quite a bit of strain that consumers are faced with. And I think coupled with this data that we're getting from the survey, I think that's going to take quite a bit of time. However, I think the way that one can also read this data that we received today in the context of the point that you've just made now is when we ask consumers about their household financial outlook, it's still fairly optimistic in the sense that that index is still in positive territory. So while some cohorts of consumers that have taken up this relatively expensive credit, we do see that there are pockets where consumers are in a position where they're not carrying that burden and will participate a little bit more.
Mamela, what are the positives to take from the latest consumer confidence index? I mean, I'm looking at another stat that says that this increase in credit usage from a household perspective is the biggest that we've seen since the first quarter of 2023. That doesn't sound like a positive, but I would like to see if there are any green shoots that consumers are optimistic about, whether it's from an economic standpoint or at least from a household point.
So I think the way that one can read this data is if you segment it by household income and where we see purchasing power, that tends to be or to lean more towards your high income households. So the fact that they were, confidence in that segment was relatively unmoved suggests that it should be positive for the retail sector over the coming months. So an improvement in retail activity should contribute positively to overall GDP growth. So I guess that's a positive that one can take out of the survey in terms of potential impact on overall GDP growth. I think the other positive, which we're not seeing come through as yet, well, we are actually seeing it in some areas. So unsecured debt, as I said, is fairly expensive, but we are seeing that consumers are starting to participate a bit more in terms of acquiring your big ticket items. So we've seen that the property market is starting to improve a little bit. We're also seeing that consumers are utilizing facilities to acquire things such as cars. So the low interest rate environment is providing some support for your secured credit for consumers that have that capacity. And for those that are still grappling with relatively expensive debt, we think over time the low interest rate environment should be supportive of that segment of the market.
South Africa's middle class continues to remain under pressure, and despite that, there continues to be some positivity and resilience being shown within households. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the chief economist at FNB South Africa, Mamelo Madikizela-Ngwenya, for joining us to take a look at the latest consumer confidence index and what it says about South African consumers.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. As the G20 summit approaches in November, Africa continues to be in focus from a continental perspective, especially when we are looking at the prospects of the African continent. Everything from investment to growth to infrastructure, it seems all eyes are squarely focused on the African continent. And why not? Why not it be the time for this particular continent to showcase to the world what it is capable of? We're going to be taking a look at the infrastructure and investment opportunities that lie on the African continent with the Chief Executive for Africa Regions and Offshore at the Standard Bank Group. That is Lungisa Fuzile. He joins me now on the line from New York, where he's attending the United Nations General Assembly. Dr. Fuzile, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. The African story for many years has been undersold and almost forgotten. And for some reason in this particular year, with everything happening around the G20, Africa suddenly become the focal point of many a conversation and many investors. Would you say this is the right time to be having these conversations about the African continent?
It is so timely to be having these discussions on Africa, engaging both Africans and the rest of the world. In this particular case, with quite a focus on the West, the US and Europe, but not to the exclusion of other parts of the world that have got shared vision for a prospering Africa. That Africa, which requires focused investment on infrastructure, and in particular, investment in the trade corridors, such as the Lobito Corridor, for an example, that connects Angola, the DRC, Zambia. You know, those trade corridors in the context of a continent whose many countries have just signed up to the AFCTA. So we need to make targeted investments in the components of infrastructure that would make that aspiration of increasing volumes of trade by connecting Africa to global supply chains to happen. Now, chairing the G20, as you referred to it, South Africa's turn came at an opportune moment. And out of the 8 task forces, Siim Tshabalala, the group CEO of Standard Bank, has been honored to chair the finance and infrastructure task team, which has pondered and made concrete and implementable recommendations towards making sure that, you know, the continent has got a pipeline of investable, or some call it bankable, projects. It is very timely, therefore, that we are here in a way to showcase Africa to the world. And we're here as the biggest bank by assets in the continent, operating in no less than 21 countries. So it makes sense that we are part of the conversations, leading some of them, and I say it with humility, and indicating to people that Africa's time has come, and that coming from people who have put their balance sheet to work, you know, on the continent, I think carries a lot of credibility.
Lungisa, you touched on a couple of things that stand out when you look at the timing of this particular African story, the fact that South Africa has the opportunity to lead the continent once again, as we have before as a country, but more than that, for business to lead as well, and to lead by example. You mentioned that Standard Bank is the largest bank by assets on the African continent, but of course, for those that have forgotten, Standard Bank is also the lead sponsor on the B20 track, as well as a key stakeholder, as you said, as part of the overall B20 and G20 ambitions. Take us through, from a continental positioning perspective, what that then means for the ability to raise capital, the ability to pipeline projects in the right sectors and in the right sorts of areas that can benefit the African continent, and the fact that from a continental perspective, many might forget, but Africa still has the youngest population globally, and that's set to give us a strategic advantage in many, many years to come.
As many would say, Jimmy, Africa is on the cusp of a demographic dividend. With a youthful population with a median age of 20 years, that compares to 40, for instance, for Europe, an increasingly urbanizing population, we are indeed on the cusp of a demographic dividend. We therefore must be ready to seize the moment as the continent. We must be ready to do what is necessary and what it takes to actualize that demographic dividend. It requires that we must shine the spotlight on the deficits that Africa has insofar as infrastructure is concerned, for instance. By some studies, by some measure, the shortfall in infrastructure investment per annum that's required to close that gap in the African continent is somewhere between 150 and 170 billion US dollars. So we need to really double down and make sure that, one, we are clear about the components of infrastructure that have to be invested in. We have concrete plans in that regard. Secondly, we must be clear about what are the constraints, the things that stand in the way of Africa being able to attract funding in the required volumes, and a solution for that. And of course, make changes as we go along. And in that regard, let me be specific. For instance, it's clear that in many instances, if we do not, as a continent, work to make sure that we encourage sort of the so-called blended finance options, options that mitigate the risk, even if it's perceived in many instances, not sufficient, not as real as sometimes people make it out to be, we've got to solve for the risk and make sure that investors feel that the exposure they can take when they invest in these projects is within their risk appetite. So blended finance options that pull together development finance institutions, such as in South Africa's case or Southern Africa's case, the DBSA, in Africa's case, the AFDB. But of course, the global financial institutions are also required, because the enormity of the task is way beyond the resources that Africa can mobilize on its own. So we've got to create that mobility, that ability to attract the required pools of capital into these projects. And of course, where there are certain regulations in our countries that might be problematic, we do have to review those with the view to making the necessary changes that would ensure that we attract the required funding. And there is no doubt that the continent gets this, and South Africa has embraced its place because chairing the G20 is no mean feat. Seated in that room when the G20 convenes in November would be nations that account for upwards of 70-80% of global GDP. So it's leaders that can move the dial. And therefore, President Ramaphosa and those around him have made it clear that this G20 is not just about South Africa. It is about Africa. And it is for that reason that Standard Bank has decided to put its money where its mouth is by contributing towards enabling a successful G20 for South Africa.
All roads of opportunity lead to the African continent, and the African continent is ready to seize those opportunities. That is what we're going into our G20 presidency at the end of the year with as a message, and that is what we are saying to the world. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Chief Executive for Africa Regions and Offshore at the Standard Bank Group, Lungisa Fuzile, for joining us to take a look at the Africa story and the infrastructure investment of the African continent. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Mark your calendars, folks. The team at Disney Plus announced that from the 2nd of October, ESPN Africa's linear channels will be available as part of the Disney Plus subscriptions in South Africa. We're going to take a look at this and see what it means for those that want to stream sports through their Disney Plus subscription. I'm joined on the line by the general manager for DTC and Networks, who's also the country manager for Sub-Saharan Africa at the Walt Disney Company. That is Christine Service. Let's take a look at this and see what we make of it. Christine, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Interesting decision by the Walt Disney business to add this to your existing offering. Why the timing of this, and why add this to the South African bouquet at this stage?
Good evening, Jimmy, and good evening to all the listeners. And yes, thank you. Yes, you know, at Disney, we at our core believe that storytelling has the power to connect us all. And we've been doing that on Disney Plus for a long time with our great iconic brands like Disney and Pixar and Marvel and National Geographic and Star Wars and all of the general entertainment content. And it really is about making sure that there is something, a story for everyone on the platform. And what's really exciting now is that there's more choice than ever, because now we are adding our two linear live sports channels to give audiences and subscribers a live sports channel, live sports offering on the platform. And really, it's a nice time now because we're really at the, you know, we've got lots of football fixtures on. We're at the start of the NBA season. So it's a good time for sports fans to be being able to engage, you know, with the sports that they love on Disney Plus.
Christine, let's take a look at the streaming landscape in the broader sense. I mean, Disney has been very deliberate around some of the decisions that the business has made. I think back to the decision to pull all the Marvel content off of a rival platform like Netflix that took place a couple of years ago. This has been a very concerted effort to say we are going to compete in the streaming space, and we're going to compete with the product sets that we have, the likes of ESPN that are owned by the Disney family. How are you seeing the competitiveness of the streaming landscape at the moment with the likes of Netflix and the likes of a MultiChoice and Showmax in the local context? How is that affecting your decisions?
Yeah, well, you know, you really leaned into that there, because what we at Disney, we have a great privilege in that we are the custodians of some unbelievable brands, world top brands in, you know, in Marvel, in Star Wars, in Disney and Pixar, but also in all of the general entertainment content that comes out of the other studios, the studios within the Walt Disney fold. And so we very much lean into that unique proposition, which really is about having something for everybody in the family. And of course, now with ESPN and a live sports offering, we also have something for those sports fans, which we know are big in this country. It's a very sport-driven market here, and it's something also that creates a sense of community and co-viewing, and really that sense of storytelling that Disney is all about, you know, stories that generations can watch together. Really, that is, you know, sports sums that up really in a big way. So it's very aligned with what we think are our unique positioning in the market.
Christine, do you believe that the future of sports, in terms of how it's consumed, at least from a consumer perspective, is through streaming? I mean, I'm thinking about what the ESPN offering looks like. I'm thinking about the likes of the Super Sport offering that exists in South Africa, the likes of Formula One, where races are streamed now across various apps and facilities. Do you believe that sports is going to be, or at least in the future, enjoyed best through streaming services?
You know, we think that there is a role for streaming and for linear viewing. And in fact, in Africa, we've got six linear TV channels, including our two sport ones. And really, for us, what we want to do is make sure there are multiple points of accessing our content for our audiences, whether that be through streaming or through linear. And on a global basis, we're investing in both of those means of distribution. So I think we think that there's a role for both. And it really is about how our audiences want to access our content. So they both remain very, very important to us.
Christine, how do you balance the costing versus offering a diverse product range? I mean, for Disney, it might be a bit easier than some of the other competitors with the breadth of assets and other portfolios that exist within the Disney family. But how do you then strike the balance between offering a competitive subscription whilst at the same time offering enough variety so that consumers are encouraged to maintain their subscriptions?
Yes, well, look, we're adding our linear channels on. There's no increase in the monthly cost for the subscription by adding them. And really, as a business, that's the approach we take, which is to continue to add to the portfolio on the platform, and then continue to grow the platform both in terms of the number of subscribers that subscribe, but also importantly for us, the engagement. So the amount of time that people spend on the platform and how long they remain subscribers. So it really is a balance of all of those things for us.
Mm. Christine, is there a particular reason, at least from a strategy point of view, why streaming services might, say, hold out on some of their offerings in certain regions? Is it largely demand-driven? Is it a tech integration conversation? I mean, from your perspective, I can imagine that this is not the full offering that Disney can put into the South African market, but you also have to be strategic about how you roll it out into the market.
Yes.
What does that look like from a business side?
Yeah, in terms of a content offering, really, you know, you have the full offering here. And I think that's one of the advantages that Disney has, because we have such a strong and powerful content engine of content we produce ourselves. We're very much in control of the rights that we have and really focus on making sure that in all markets we are able to offer the best possible offering. I think that's not necessarily the same for other streamers who don't have the same content engine, but certainly, you know, here in terms of what we produce as a business, South Africans are getting that full offer.
Christine, does the business take the view of assessing kind of customer needs from your various regions and saying perhaps we can start to look at bolt-on acquisitions at a group level that we can then filter through into the business? I mean, a business like Disney globally competes with everybody from a Canal Plus to other service providers around the world, and surely a competitive edge then becomes having such a deep and diversified portfolio to be able to offer. Does that then mean that the Walt Disney business is always looking to say, what else can we add to our offering?
Sure, we do that continuously. We're always looking at who else can we add, what products can we add. You know, local content comes into that in many markets. So yes, that is something that we do all across the globe and tailor our offering in each market that we're in.
Christine, before I let you go, I want to come back to the two ESPN channels that will be made available on the 2nd of October to South African markets. Is that something that you intend to then roll out onto the rest of the African continent at a later stage? Is that something that you're going to kind of look at South Africa and say, this is what South Africa has been asking for or needs at this point, and we're going to give it to them for now, and then we'll see where we go from there?
Well, the two linear channels are indeed available throughout the continent on our key affiliate platforms like the MultiChoice Group and platforms like Star Times and Azam in East Africa. So the linear channels are available across the continent. And from a Disney Plus point of view, we have nothing to announce at the moment, but certainly as a company, we are continuing to expand Disney Plus, you know, globally, and that's something that's important to us.
Disney Plus continues its expansion, and alongside that continues to offer products to the market as the market demands them. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Christine Service, the General Manager for DTC and Networks, who's also the Country Manager for Sub-Saharan Africa at the Walt Disney Company, joining us to take a look at Disney Plus's latest decision to add sports channels to their South African offering.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. No one throws a good party like South Africans do, and in celebration of Heritage Day yesterday, the team at SAB did just that. They threw the world's biggest braai. We're going to take a look at this with the brand director for Castle Lager at South African Breweries, Thomas Lawrence, and see what we make of yesterday's events. Thomas, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Celebrating 130 years is one thing, but to do it by waiting for what is effectively National Braai Day at this point and then hosting the biggest braai. Tell us about that. Tell us about what happened yesterday and how it went.
Yeah, good evening to you and to the listeners. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, as we know, South Africans' Heritage Day is quite important. It's about celebrating the things that, I guess, bring us together as South Africans. And a few things you touched on, and a few things do that better than a braai. So yesterday, Castle Lager hosted a number of braais around the country, in Cape Town, in Durban. The biggest one we hosted with our partners in Big Save was in Pretoria at Loftus, where we attempted to break the Guinness World Record for most people braaiing at the same time. It was quite a special day, you know, lots of music, lots of fun, new memories made. And at Castle Lager, it's a way of marking, I guess, you know, 130 years of being Castle Lager and being part of South Africa's story. Because just like a braai, you know, Castle has always been there. When people come together, they connect, they share, and they celebrate. So it was quite a important day for us to mark and celebrate.
Thomas, let's take a look at the presence of a brand like Castle Lager in the South African market. I mean, yes, the South African breweries business has been around for 130 years, and that is what we've been celebrating for the most part of the year. But I can remember a time where we've gone from having these rugby and cricket Castle Lager sponsorships to having Charles Glass being painted on the bottle stores. And I only know this because my father used to do some of that painting by hand as well. And so Castle Lager's legacy is rich within the South African market. How do you even begin to celebrate a legacy that runs that deep?
Yeah, I think, you know, at the heart of Castle Lager, we say that we exist to tell stories about what South Africans love the most. And we know what South Africans love the most. You know, we love our sport, as you mentioned. We love our braai. We love coming together and having a good time. I think this year, just like the South African breweries, is a special year for Castle Lager. We're celebrating 130 years, you know, of being part of the fabric of this country. You know, we've been there for milestones in sport, as you mentioned, in 1995 when we lifted our first World Cup trophy. In 2007, 2019, 2023, when South Africans came together. 1996, when Bafana Bafana lifted the AFCON trophy, we're busy supporting the boys in their quest to qualify for the FIFA World Cup next year. You know, so we've been there for a very long time, and at the heart of that is to bring South Africans together, to connect, and to be proudly South African.
Thomas, you touched on this a little earlier to say that very few things unite South Africans like a braai and a good conversation. Is this perhaps the message that you want South Africans to be able to take away, is that the Castle Lager brand represents the unity of South Africa and the unity in the diversity that we have within the South African country and within the African continent in general, I suppose?
Absolutely. For us, the message is quite simple. You know, Castle Lager belongs to all South Africans. It's more than a beer. It's about belonging. It's about those special moments that we just chatted about now. It's about creating new memories. So for yesterday, for us, and on Heritage Day, it wasn't just our celebration. We feel it was South Africa's celebration. Because this brand has been around for 130 years and long may it continue. You know, we've been through the highs and some of the lows of our country for more than 100 years. So long may that continue.
Now, I was unfortunately sad to miss out on yesterday's festivities. Does this mean that the braai is going to become an annual tradition? I mean, we do have Heritage Day on an annual basis. Is this something we're going to be looking to do every year going forward?
Yeah, you know, Castle has always celebrated these moments, you know, where South Africans come together. Heritage Day is once a year. It's quite a special milestone for us. But we know how much people love coming together around a braai, around a fire. So you can definitely expect Castle, you know, to keep finding ways to bring South Africans together. I don't believe it has to be on Heritage Day. You know, it can be every day. It can be Saturday when we're supporting the Springboks against Argentina. Feel that braai is, you know, it unites us as South Africans. And I believe there'll be more opportunities to bring South Africans together around a fire, around a cold Castle Lager, and make new memories.
If there's one thing South Africans don't need, it's a reason to gather and have a good braai together. I know December's coming up, and that's usually just every day becomes a braai day in December. Thomas, I want to take a look at some of the responsibilities that come with these conversations for a business like SAB, it has been a big focal point as well this year. And to say, even though we are celebrating as a brand 130 years, as a business 130 years, it's important to be able to celebrate responsibly. It's important to be able to keep in mind that the nature of the products that South African breweries supply need to be consumed responsibly. And SAB hasn't shied away from that responsibility. Take us through, just from a Casa Lager perspective, what that starts to look like for a brand that has, as we said, the rich legacy that it does.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we take, responsibility extremely important. It is always top of mind. It's the highest priority we have when we develop our marketing campaigns. It is the number one thing that guides us. Yes, you know, we want South Africans to come together. We want us to celebrate together. But at the same time, we want us to celebrate responsibly. You know, because we believe that, Castle brings people together to create new memories, but we do so extremely responsibly.
Responsibility and a love for South Africa. This is what keeps the Castle Lager brand and the South African breweries business indeed invested in the South African market. 130 years of South African breweries, 130 years of Castle Lager. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much, Thomas, for those insights. Congratulations on the big Braai Day. We look forward to having more of them. And as you rightly said, Thomas, we don't need to wait another year for the next one. We need to celebrate South Africa and need to celebrate being South African. That was Thomas Lawrence, the brand director at Castle Lager, joining us to take a look at their Heritage Day celebrations that coincide with the overall celebrations that South African Breweries has been having. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope, it's brewing dreams,
it's brewing a legacy for over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls, to brew moments that matter, that bring us together, for you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It's SME of the Week time. We get to speak to a South African business doing really, really well for themselves, and hopefully we get to help them do a little bit better. This week's SME is a very interesting business by the name of Mahlasedi. I've got the founder of the business, Thato Poo, joining me on the line to take a look at her business and get a sense of why it is that she built this business. Thato, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Tell us about Mahlasedi. Why did you build the business and what is it?
Firstly, thank you for having me. I built Mahlasedi because I saw a gap in the market, obviously based on the products that I currently selling. So just to elaborate mostly on that is that in 2020 COVID, when I started my business, I did my research on the kind of products that I'm doing right now. I was working for a hotel. The hotel that we're working at, we used to serve a lot of buffet and other food in the restaurant, and we would struggle a lot with flies, you know, and what was existing in the market was not helping. So an idea dropped down to me that how about I do related products, you know, and obviously based on the research that I have, use different ingredients in order for me to produce different results. And that's just how the business started.
So Thato, what is it that you make today, and how do you go about making these products?
So what I'm making today is that I make insect repellent candles, and I also make insect repellent balms. Our insect repellent candles, it's a blend of lemongrass and lime with an active ingredient of citronella. What sets it apart from what already exists in the market is that our candle is a dual candle. So you burn the candle, obviously, to repel flies and mosquitoes, and you can also use it on your body to prevent mosquito bites. You can also use it as a pleasant scent within your home because of the lemongrass and lime scent. And the balm does pretty much the same thing. with a bit of health benefits that the balm contains.
With mosquito season coming up, this is definitely something to look into. Tato, I understand that the business has grown quite considerably since the pandemic, since you first built the business. You're now in ShopRite stores and Checkers stores. Take me through that journey and how you were able to get your product into such a big retailer.
Yes, so I started off by selling my products online, mostly Instagram and WhatsApp. And I saw that there is a demand for the products, and then that's how I approached ShopRite. And upon approaching ShopRite, they had a small business program that they do in, within their business, and that's where they placed me under. I was placed under that program whereby they take small businesses and grow them into what they into bigger suppliers. So I am now part of that small program for ShopRite. However, my products are not at ShopRite. My products are with Checkers. So the business that takes us through into this whole thing, it's Next Capital, not ShopRite. So yes, my products are with Checkers because Checkers is a premium brand for ShopRite. So that's where I sell my products.
Tato, how long does it take you to make the repellent candles and the balms?
For the candle, it takes approximately, let's say, 30 minutes per candle. But obviously, because I do it in bulks, it's still the same, depending how many I do. But making a candle is very easy and it's very fast. And also the balm. But for it to set, to be a finished product, we can give it up to 24 hours to produce good results.
Tato, I see on the website that you guys added essential oils to the product offering as well. Tell me about that. Tell me about the move from the other products that you have and how the essential oils fits into that as well.
Actually, before I started doing insect repellent candles and balms, I started with scented candles, essential oils, and yes, just those two. And because there was a bigger opportunity for the insect repellent candle and balm, that's what became the core business. However, we do offer other products like your home care products, your reed diffusers, your essential oils, your scented candles. They are just not in the market like the insect repellent candle and balm. Those we sell directly to our customers on our online platforms.
Tato, what do you want to do with the business now? I mean, you've done something that many people dream of doing with their small business. You've grown it, you've gotten it into a big retailer, you continue to sell more insect repellent. Where do you want the business to go? What is your dream for the business?
My dream for the business is to see myself selling in all Checkers stores in South Africa. One, secondly, Walmart and Pick and Pay, Spar, and the rest of the retailers that exist within our country, because I would like my product to be as accessible as it can possibly be, as it is a great product for home use and for everybody that needs it. I know it has been doing so well, so I would love everybody to actually get to use it and experience how it feels having it in your household and seeing it work effectively for you.
Tato, where do people get hold of the products? If someone's not able to go to one of the Checkers outlets where the product is, you mentioned that you have an online presence. Tell us all of the details about where people can order the product from you if they want to try it out, where they can see it on the socials. Give us all of those details.
So we are currently at Checkers stores. We are also available on Checkers 6060. And if people cannot reach both platforms, we are available on our website, which is www.matlasedigroup.co.za. And we also have Instagram. Our Instagram page is Matlasedi Group, where they can actually send us a DM after they have been through our page and if they are interested. And we are also available on WhatsApp for orders, which is 071-909-9095.
And that online platform, folks, is matlasedigroup.co.za, matlasedigroup.co.za. Give them a shout, check them out. Their prices are on their website, their products are on their website, and this is really a business that you might want to take a look at as we go into the summer of South Africa. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Tato. We wish you the best of luck with your business, Tato. We'd love to see the business grow from here, and please keep us updated on what it is that you come up with next. That was Tato Poo, the founder of Matlasedi, joining us to take take a look at her business that she founded in the pandemic that has been thriving since and what she intends to do with it. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, 46669. T's and C's apply.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, they are, of course, going to be made available as podcasts to listen to after the show. We will be looking at the end of September next week. The month officially wraps up on Tuesday, so we've got two more trading days to the month, and hopefully we can see where the month closes out from that perspective. For now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. So from my side, good night.